You may have noticed in the news the UK government's COVID inquiry is underway. It will take evidence from organisations, individuals, governments from around the UK and more, looking back at the handling of the COVID pandemic. RNIB will be taking part in the inquiry. A little bit of time to go though, but we are joined by Sophie Dudgeon, who is the Interim Head of Policy and Public Affairs for RNIB. So it's really looking at how the UK dealt with the COVID pandemic. But I suppose that takes in a huge swathe of witnesses and organisations because everyone was kind of involved, even the third sector, which is why RNIB is there.
It's a substantial piece of work that has been set up and it's been underway for some time. But the reason it's come to everyone's attention has been it opened its public hearings earlier in June. And basically, the inquiry is looking at the handling of the pandemic, as you say, across England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland. It is taking evidence. It's got the power to request witnesses to come and speak, as it has done, you know, so far with various health experts and government ministers, past and present. It works through modules. So there will be different sections on different topics. And RNIB has particular interest in the thread of looking at how disabled people were affected, which we do expect to be a theme running through the work of the inquiry. But there is a separate inquiry also taking place in Scotland, which will look at the areas where the policy and decision making was devolved to the Scottish Government. And what's great to hear is that the UK inquiry says it plans to work with that Scottish inquiry, so they're not duplicating evidence and findings, so they will be in touch with each other.
What particularly will RNIB be talking about? I mean, do you get a chance to put points across, or is it just answering the questions that are put to you?
So RNIB is going to be part of what's called Module 3, looking at the impact on the healthcare system. And we're doing that as part of the Disability Charities Consortium. But the reason we want to really talk is the official data is simply so stark. You know, the rates of death for people with a vision impairment, particularly aged 30 to 69 years old, were 8.4 times higher than for those without any sensory impairment at all. And after adjusting for different sort of characteristics, things like age and geography and existing health, rates of death were actually still 1.4 times higher. So this is something we really want to make sure is brought to the attention of the inquiry. We'll be taking part by providing that evidence and being ready to provide more evidence if required. It'd be very much up to the inquiry how they manage their sessions and who they want to call for as witnesses.
Will one of the things that RNIB is talking about be around sort of information and communication? Because that was, you know, very difficult for blind and partially sighted people to access printed advice using COVID tests, all that kind of thing. It really was a struggle, wasn't it?
It really was. And I think that's something that comes through very strongly. You know, we know that people were receiving inaccessible health information. This is a time when public health information was really, really crucial for everybody. And to have blind and partially sighted people simply unable to know whether they were meant to shield because letters didn't come in the right format, that's just not acceptable. And we really, really need to make sure that all emergency planning for the future is really going to think about the needs of people who are blind and partially sighted right from the very beginning. We want them involved. We want them in the room. We want, you know, existing rules to really be followed, because there were things like the NHS accessible information standards that were in place. They should have been followed. There should have been accessible information, particularly around health issues.
Myself, I remember taking part in some research into making the COVID test accessible, and we're looking at how you dealt with those in the first place. For me anyway, who was blind, it was impossible for me to do the tests on my own. I was fortunate that, you know, I have my wife and family around me to help with that. But for those who perhaps live on their own, that's a massive thing. When you're talking about testing for COVID, you know, you didn't want to be going out if you had COVID. So will they be looking at things like accessibility around, you know, medical things like that going forward too? Will that be one of the things RNIB is putting forward?
Yes, that's certainly something else that we've raised, because it took a long time to make progress on things like accessible testing. We just want to be sure that lessons really are learned, that there shouldn't be months of development and work going into making things accessible when they're absolutely critical to enabling people to get on with their lives at such a time of emergency.
Difficult as well when you're out and about. We got the chance to go out and about at the beginning. We had one-way systems in supermarkets. There were screens up. It was really difficult just to get out there and, you know, do your daily shopping. And even internet shopping rocketed at that point as well. But again, there were difficulties around accessibility there. So that seemed to be one of the big issues as well. Just getting your foodstuffs was difficult.
So there was a survey that RNIB actually ran right at, back at the beginning of the pandemic, if you remember. So it was April, May sort of time of 2020. Three quarters of the people responding to that survey said they were concerned about getting hold of food. And we know that was partly because, you know, those delivery slots that suddenly got reserved, the online delivery slots were being reserved for clinically vulnerable groups. And this was the challenge, really, was that there were some really massive decisions that affected people's lives. And we need decision makers in future to not only think about the direct impact of what they're trying to do, which was, you know, they were definitely trying to make sure that people who were clinically vulnerable could access food. But what wasn't taken into account was how that policy would impact on other people indirectly, and how you've got to think about everybody in the mix and have disabled people's voices there right from the beginning, just to make sure that there's no unintended consequences.
I think it's fair to say as well, isn't it, that, you know, even since the pandemic, probably before as well, but very much since and during the pandemic, RNIB has worked with the commercial side of things, you know, retailers, worked with NHS as well around accessible information. So a lot of work is ongoing, perhaps, to, heaven forbid we get into this situation again, to make that kind of thing a lot easier. But I suppose there'll be a lot of hope on the outcomes of this inquiry as well.
Yes, definitely. So what we've been told is that the chair of the inquiry is hoping to issue reports at intervals. So rather than waiting until 2025, 2026, when the hearings and the evidence taking would be complete, there should be some reports coming as the inquiry moves along, which I think is really positive, because I think everyone's really keen to make sure that some lessons are learned quite quickly. The way it's been set up so far, we have good reason to hope that it's going to do a really thorough job. It's got a really big workload lined up, as I say, with the modules. It's got various more modules that it will be opening on different issues to come. So it will be looking at the care sector, the impact on children and young people, for instance, and also on health inequalities. So there's quite a lot of different sections to this inquiry where we really want to make sure that the experiences of blind and partially sighted people are properly heard. There is a listening exercise as part of the inquiry, which I'd really encourage anyone who'd like to share their experiences to do so. They can get in touch with the inquiry themselves directly. You know, RNIB will present what it can, but we really would love other people's voices to be coming through directly. So people can submit their experiences at the moment through a survey form on the website. And if people can't go online, they'll be able to get hold of the survey by emailing the inquiry. It says contact@covid19.public-inquiry.uk. Or you can write simply to Free Post, UK COVID-19 Public Inquiry. That's the address. Very simple to get paper versions of that survey. And later this summer, we know there will be a phone line opening up to help people who wish to share their stories by telephone as well. And there'll be additional offers of things like sharing experiences in British Sign Language or by Easy Read, Braille and other languages. So there's lots of ways in which people will be able to share their experiences directly, which will really build up kind of the understanding of how people were affected. And on top of that, there's going to be in-person events that the inquiry plans to hold around the country, and dates and locations of those are yet to be announced, but you know, we're really positive that people will be able to take part in different parts of the UK. And just to remind you of the website address, it's covid19.public-inquiry.uk for the whole inquiry website. And then if you want to find the listening exercise, it's /every-story-matters.
Sophie, we'll be back with you, no doubt, several times over the course of the inquiry. But thank you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, Alan.